behind the scenes of what's happening in the business world. Jeffrey Hazlett hosts All Business, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. You're listening to All Business with Jeffrey Hazlett, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts.
You may not know my guest by name, but I'm sure you've heard of the company they founded. Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey are the founders of the massively popular wine label Barefoot Wine. Though their story is far more than just a wine label, it represents the success of a small startup that began in a laundry room and wound up in the boardroom of the world's largest wine company. Starting with no money and no knowledge of their industry, Michael and Bonnie bootstrapped a novel brand and disrupted their industry. They eventually sold Barefoot to E&J Gallo, and today they are sharing their success story through two best-selling books and an internet series geared at entrepreneurs. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to All Business with Jeffrey Hazlett, right here, Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey.
He's one of the world's most respected business experts, Jeffrey Hazlett.
I want to take you behind the scenes on what's happening in business today. And whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, we're going to find out the secrets behind their success.
This is All Business with Jeffrey Hazlett, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts.
Hey, first question. This is a new book that kind of complements the last book, right? I mean, which was a runaway bestseller, which, I mean, unbelievable. Barefoot Wine, Barefoot Spirit, right? That was the name of the first one, right?
Yeah, the Barefoot Spirit, How Hardship, Hustle, and Heart Built America's Number One Wine Brand. New York Times bestseller in business.
Yeah, in a great book. I mean, we had you on the bestseller show. I've read this book. I actually have about, I think, 10 copies here in my office that I give to especially entrepreneurs, because I think they should read this, because, I mean, you hustled it when you guys were starting the Barefoot brand. I mean, you really pounded the pavement selling store by store. And, you know, I always tell people, even my own books, it's called hard work because it's hard.
That's absolutely right. That's why we have the hardship first in the subtitle.
So let's talk about the new one, because I love this one, The Entrepreneurial Culture, 23 Ways to Engage and Empower Your People. Why did you settle on 23? Why not 24?
Well, 23 has a lot more credibility to it. You know, when somebody says 24, you know, they go, oh, well, I could divide it by two. So 23 is a prime number, and we think this is a prime cause. You know, so many corporations are out there, and they want to know. They say, how do I make my people, you know, more engaged? How do I empower my people? And then you turn around and you look at their structure and you look at their policies and procedures, and that's why.
Yeah.
They're held down. They're just like a horse in a corral.
Well, you know, let me jump in, because you talked about structures, because you've got something in the book called the two-division company, and you talk about this pyramid versus the two-division company structure. Talk to me about that.
Well, you know, pyramids always start with the president on the top, and then you've got, you know, the CEO, the vice president, you've got all the managers and the different divisions, and they're all kind of broken down underneath the president, and that's kind of how the whole company feels. It's their attitude about doing business, and they have to go through a lot of different levels in order to get their ideas up to the top of the pyramid. But we say pyramids are for dead pharaohs. Hey, let's get back to business.
That's true.
So if you've got a company, what do you need besides sales and sales support? Those are the two divisions. If you're going to be successful, that's what you've got. You've got a two-division company. Sales are on top. They share the information that they get out in the field. They are talking to the consumers, the distributors, the customers. They're talking to the retailers. They're talking to everybody that you do business with on a daily basis. They use that information by sharing it with the sales support division, okay? Mm-hmm. And so marketing gets that information, and production gets that information, and even your CFO, if he's the one that sets the prices on the products, he gets that information. So by sharing that information, you're really keeping your product relevant to your end users.
Well, you know, I think that is absolutely spot on in terms of keeping sales at the forefront, especially I think that's more important when you're a new business as a startup. And the reason I say that is that sales can overcome a lot of sins in the company. That if I've got sales coming in, I can make up a lot of different things based on sales. But if I don't have sales coming in, it can be a real problem.
No, absolutely. And, you know, another part of the sales division we like to put in is the customer service department. Now, a lot of companies, they call it, you know, they call it customer service, but basically they're calling it complaint resolution. That's how they view the 800 number people. And we spoke recently at SOCAP, which is the Society for Customer Affairs Professionals, Consumer Affairs Professionals. And these are the people who are the 800 number people for the Fortune 500s. And here they all meet together and they say, well, how are we going to get the word that we get in over the phone to the production people, to the marketing people, to the design people, to the R&D people, and to the administrators? And so they were afraid that they would be stepping on toes if they asked for a formal line of communication to get that information that keeps their products and services relevant. And these are big companies now. So like you say, yes, the sales department is king in a startup. But when you get into a big corporate structure, it's really the customer service department. And we like to rename it. We call it customer intel.
Customer, in terms of gathering the detail. Because in that department, I mean, they're giving you insights on things you should be doing differently, which could become product enhancements or new ways of serving people or even new audiences altogether.
Absolutely. And they're telling you what they think about your product, if it's good or if it's bad. We actually got a lot of excellent calls, loving our product on our 800 number. We were the first winery to put an 800 number on our bottle. We actually put it on the cork to start with.
Did you really?
Yeah, we were the very first. Huh. And the information we got back, the biggest complaint we had was they couldn't find our product in the stores. Well, if you've got a complaint like that, you take it right to your distributor, you take it right to your retailer, and you say, hey, I've got customers out there that want my product, and you got to get it out there where they can pick it up. That was our biggest problem, is not having our product out there for the customers to pick up, because once they had it, they picked it up.
Now, you guys were a husband-wife team, which is, you know, a lot of businesses are like that. How did you guys decide who did what in the business?
Oh, it was easy. You know, Bonnie was the boss, okay? And I just
that's
said,
number one,
and, then,
Jeff.
And I said, yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
no, what really happened, Jeff, is that, and, you know, we say, kids, don't try this at home, right? The idea of being a romantic couple and going into business together. Don't try this at home.
Yeah,
it's really tough.
It's tough.
You have to be blessed with different skill sets. Now, Bonnie has, you know, the detailed mind, you know, she's into minutiae, she can handle the lawyer, she can handle the IRS, she can handle, you know, the real estate contracts, all this kind of stuff, which I call minutiae, right?
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like the sword, you know, swashbuckler, right? I can do the planning, I can do the sales, I can do the marketing programs, things like that. So basically, her job is to keep my shoes tight so I don't fall down swashbuckling my sword.
Yeah.
Right? And my job is to keep her in enough cash flow so she can pay the bills and maintain the credit. But it's tough. It's tough. You have to have separate offices. You can't talk about business in bed. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
At the beginning of the year, you've got to make a non-refundable purchase for a ticket to a romantic getaway, and then build your business around that as the year goes on, and then take that trip and go down to, you know, Hawaii, Barbados, someplace that, you know, that you want to go to and have a romantic getaway. No phones, you know, just the two of you. But there's a lot more to it than that. In fact, we spoke at a very interesting school. You know the 10-gallon hat that you wear called the Stetson?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't wear one of those. I wear a different one, but I do know that hat, yeah.
Well, the 10-gallon hat, you know, the hat that won the West. So the guy who did it, the wife, you know, it was a husband and wife team, she built a college called Stetson University, and it's down there in northern Florida, and we went and spoke, and it focuses on family businesses and the problems with family businesses. And so they brought us up and they asked us that question, you know, how come you guys aren't divorced yet, you know?
Hey, let me take a quick break. I do want to come back to this because you said something I thought was, well, you say a lot of things that are real important because I've got to know you over the years, and I love listening to the both of you and just hanging out with you. But I want to talk about Dunkin' because I want to have a little fun with Dunkin' trivia for today. There, of course, this show is brought to you by Dunkin'. Did you know that back in the late 70s and 80s, Dunkin' used to sell Easter egg donuts? I had no clue. They were chocolate-covered, sprinkled egg-shaped donuts that came with their very – it came in their own egg carton. That's crazy. You could get a whole dozen for $1.99. In 2016, they no longer sell the Easter egg donut, but they're still keeping America running all these years later. America runs on Dunkin', and so does All Business with Jeffrey Hazlett. I love coffee. You guys drink coffee? I know you're wine guys, but are you coffee people too?
Well, you know, for us, we look at coffee as some kind of jet fuel. You know, it's like if you want to get a lot done that day, you definitely have a cup of coffee. But Bonnie could speak more about it.
Yeah, I've been a coffee achiever on a number of days. We coffee up and then we wind down.
I love it. I love it.
I'm a professional businesswoman trying to juggle my career with raising two wonderful but a lot of work teenagers. I wish I had time to do more things, but I just don't seem to ever have enough time. I have to admit, I was a little anxious about taking my car to Oil Stop drive-through oil change for the first time. My dealer just took too long, and frankly, I got tired of the stale coffee and cold popcorn. I was pleasantly surprised at Oil Stop. Kathy and Brian did a great job. They eased my fears at the get-go with a complimentary cup of hot, fresh coffee and a gracious welcome. I got to stay in my car and observe everything they did. I don't know much about cars, but they scored points by taking the time to explain everything. They were busy, but they did their entire 33-point service in about 25 minutes, and that included the oil change and an automatic transmission service. I didn't realize businesses like Oil Stop still existed. You know, companies that have well-trained, honest, and polite men and women working for them. I'll be back.
The scenes of what's happening in the business world. Jeffrey Hazlett hosts All Business, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts.
We're talking to the owners, former owners of Barefoot Wine, and of course they've gone on to big fame and fortune, leading one of the biggest businesses of all time, one of the greatest startups, and I got to tell you, cashed out and did a great job with it. Now they're taking their knowledge and they're sharing with us in their newest book. And I want to talk, you said something I thought was really insightful for husband-wife teams, and that is you got to separate it when you get home.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You said in the bed, Michael, but I'm going to just pick the whole home thing. Because, you know.
Well, You're absolutely right, Jeff. You know, if you want to have a fight, start talking business anywhere in the house.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, who's the toughest between the two of you, by the way?
Bonnie is, for sure.
Yeah, so she's like you would probably say, "Oh, I'll give the guy a discount." And Bonnie says, "No way, no way."
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how it happens, Jeff.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, that's a good, isn't it? It's kind of good for that to have. I mean, just like people in the business, you got different roles. It's good for companies or couples to have the roles too, like that. I think.
Well, one of the things that we have a couple of advantages, but one of them is that. When I'm negotiating, I can always say, you know, I have to go to a higher authority. You know, I'm going to take your offer and I'm going to run it by the boss and see what she says.
Yeah.
And, you know, then, you know, I can just say, okay, so here's the deal. What do you think? We come back with a counter proposal. But if it's just me, if I try to be the boss, they've got me, boy. You know.
Yeah, well, you know, I always say, Michael, I always put one person, I used to say this in corporate business when I was in big corporations doing stuff, always put one person between you and harm's way, and that's kind of what you're doing here. You're saying, look, I'm going to maneuver myself strategically to always have another way to come back and ask for more or to change it or to do it differently if I need to, and I think that's a smart, smart way of doing it. Well, let me ask you about... I was just sitting down with some people and we were talking about sales commissions, incentives, and finding ways to make, you know, more happen with my own C-suite network, or the business that we run. What do you think about staff incentives?
I think they're essential. I think that they really help the staff to understand this is where the money comes from. It comes from volume in sales, it comes from growth, and it comes from profitability. Those are the three things.
Yeah.
Volume, growth, profitability. And if you can base a commission or a bonus to everyone on your staff based on those three attributes, then you're really going to have a staff that's more engaged. They are focusing on where the money comes from. They're really interested in customer service, and they're going to work their tails off and be very creative and innovative in every way that they can within their own expertise to help the company succeed in those three areas.
Well, you talk about that, Bonnie, in the book, which is the new book, by the way. I want to make sure we mention it because I don't want people to forget, The Entrepreneurial Culture, 23 Ways to Engage and Empower Your People. You talk about the money map. That's kind of where you're teaching employees how the money kind of goes from one place to the other, so they really understand where it's coming from. So if they understand where it's coming from, they'll pay more attention.
You know, it's really funny how so many employees don't even think about where the money comes from. They think the money comes from the owner of the company,
yeah,
or just the company. But the way that money comes in is actually by making sales in one form or another.
Yeah.
And we really believe in overkill of orientation for any new employee. And part of that is making sure that they understand that the company doesn't have a big pile of money out in the back that they just shovel into the employee's trunk once or twice a month, and that's where the money comes from. No, it really comes from sales. And by understanding that right away, they can figure out how they can improve growth, volume, and profitability.
Michael, did you guys ever share with the teams also the margins that you make on products so they understood the difference between? Because employees will sometimes say, oh, we're making a killing from that, when we're really not. You know, or they just think we're making so much more than what we're making. So I always used to teach them a lot about the margins and the what we did really make, so they really understood. And then the fact that we had to make that so that I could put it back in the business so we could continue to grow. What do you tell an entrepreneur in your book about that?
Well, what we tell them is to, first of all, we call it the difference between need to know and know the need. Now, the old-fashioned corporate idea is they don't need to know.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
right.
The old-fashioned idea. By the way, that was still popular last year.
Yeah. yeah.
And know the need is different. Now, the way that you get the message to the employees about margins, and you have to do this in pictures, okay? You're not going to do this in text or anything. You're not going to be able to tell them about it. You give them an information guide. It used to be called an infograph last year.
Yeah.
So we're giving them a guide now. Okay, so the guide is a picture of your product, whatever it is, right? Whether it's memberships or bottles of wine or hours of service or whatever it is. And then you break it up just like a pie, and you educate them about the various different pieces of overhead that you have, and outsourced services and everything else, until you see, you know, the little bit of, you know, coinage dropping out of the bottom of this box that goes into your company to pay your bills and all that, and then the amount that goes into the bag that everybody takes their payroll benefits and bonuses out of. And I just want to say, one of the ways that we suggested, you mentioned this earlier, and I wanted to come back to it, Jeff, and that is, how do you actually pay them?
Mm-hmm.
And so here's the deal. We like to match the company's 401k matching funds, either 50%, 100%, or 150% of employee donation based upon sales growth and profitability. Now, the reason we like that was because it's a quarterly period. If you try to give people a bonus on the year, they forget about it, or they have a lousy first quarter and they don't do anything the rest of the year.
Yeah, they don't think they'll ever get
first half.
Yeah,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, they don't think they can ever earn it back. So why? You know, I give up.
Right.
Yeah.
So here's a nice short period that people can remember, and you're going to find that your bookkeepers like it too, because they've got to finish the quarter for tax purposes and other purposes. So what we did is we said, all right, we're going to tell you the need. The need is that we need to make this much money this quarter. Here is our goal. Here's what we made. Here's what the company can contribute. So, boom, it shows up as their 401k contribution. Now they're looking at everybody on staff and saying, hey, you're a team member. You affect my 401k contribution. I have to get this information to you right away. I have to make this a top priority. And all of a sudden, they've learned this new word called urgency.
Yeah. Let me take a – you mentioned coinage, and I want to take another quick break with Liberty Tax because I love Liberty Tax. It's great to have them on board all business. Liberty's the fastest-growing retail tax preparation firm, 4,000 offices across North America. They make a great seasonal franchise opportunity as well. So if you're looking to get into the business or add a service as part of your business, or you just want some good tax prep services, look to Liberty. So let me excuse me, ask another question. With regards to handling, you wrote in your book in the section called How to Ignite Sales, viewing every person who handles your product or service as a customer. So not just your customer, but the internal customer. Talk about that for a second.
Oh, yeah. In our business, we had to make 7 sales. That means that we had to convince 7 different groups of people that touched our product. What we were doing benefited not only them, but benefited, you know, everyone else that we were doing business with. We had to have those 7 groups on our side. It started off with your own staff. Your own staff isn't behind you, you don't have a chance of growing and being successful. And it went on to the ownership of the distributor. Everyone had a different reason for buying. Each group has a different goal. And the way that you can get these other groups, these 7 sales made properly, is by understanding what their goal is and helping them achieve it. And that is what we did. For instance, the ownership of the distributors wanted a product that would fill in a gap in their book of what they were offering the retailers. And they also wanted something that was a fast mover. The sales manager in that distributorship, he or she wanted a product that was going to, quote, unquote, make the numbers. They had a certain goal, a certain number of volume, and they wanted to make their numbers. So if our product was moving quickly and we could show them how they could achieve their goal with our product, then we had them on our side. And it goes on and on to their salesman, the retailer. And here's one that a lot of companies forget, the retailer's clerk. Okay?
Yeah.
How many times does your customer go in to the store and say, well, what do you think I should buy? This is what I'm looking for. Or in our case, I'm having chicken for dinner. What kind of wine should I buy? Well, if that clerk has been given a T-shirt or a cap or out to lunch, made to feel important because our rep went in and talked to that clerk, then they're going to recommend our product. And more importantly, they're going to keep it on the shelf. One of our biggest problems was being a fast seller. We would be such a fast seller that there'd be an empty space on our shelf. Well, that really does hurt sales, doesn't it? When you're
well,
an empty space.
It's good and bad, right? It's good. It's great because you're moving products. Bad because people aren't seeing it. And a lot of times they're looking for your, you know, they're looking for the bare feet, you know.
Yeah, well, you'd better make that sale to the clerk then, because that's the person that's going to replace your product on the shelf.
Yeah. Well, you're getting to something that's also a piece in the book, which I really like this part of it. And it's high touch beats high tech. FaceTime beats Facebook. Because what you're talking about is, you know, everybody else is trying to reach everybody through social media. They're trying to reach them through email. They're trying to reach them through texting, which is without question effective. But you're saying this is better. Now, why are you saying this is better?
Well, for one thing, it goes both ways. It's better for the salesperson and it's better for the buyer. The salesperson is looking at the person's face in real time. And because the salesperson is physically there, the salesperson is saying to the buyer, I am giving you my undivided attention. I am not texting. I am not checking email. I am not posting on Instagram. I am talking to you directly and live. Now, if you can't do it in a live meeting with the buyer, you should at least do it in Skype or FaceTime or some other video program, because the human face has 20 muscles in it that can make over 600 expressions. And guess what? 300 of those 600 are negative. And if you see a negative expression, you can change your pitch. You can back off. You can restate what it is that you're trying to get across, or come back a different day when he's in a better mood, or she is. So that's why it's good for the salesperson. Now, as far as the buyer is concerned, the buyer sees that you are giving the buyer undivided attention and sees that you are sincere about giving the buyer what the buyer really wants, which is, can I trust you? Can I look into your eyes? Will you stand behind this product? See, so if he buys something online, he doesn't know very much about what kind of support he's going to get. But if he's talking to somebody in his office, he can say, now, are you going to be here when things go south?
Well, there's a lot of stickiness with that. But in today's digital market, Michael and Bonnie, I mean, people are reaching out, doing it digitally. They're making the considerations digitally. They're really going, and the first thing they do when they're thinking about buying something, someone mentioned this weekend that I should look at this electric grill because I can't, on my deck or terrace in New York City, I wanted a grill, and I can't put a gas grill in there because I'm in New York City, or a charcoal grill because I'm many floors up, so forth and so on. But you can do electric grill, and I said, well, which one's the best? They told me, and what's the first thing I do? I Google it, go look at it. But in this case, you know, you're saying the salesperson is still relevant. A lot of people would say that they're not as relevant as they used to be.
When you're building a relationship, for instance, from a salesperson who's selling a product to a buyer of, let's say, a 600-unit store chain, that person needs to look you right in the face. Yeah. You need to give them your undivided attention. It's the nicest compliment you can give anyone, is your undivided attention. You're saying, you are so important to me with your 600 outlets where I can sell my products that I'm going to come from across the country, and I'm going to sit here in your office and have a face-to-face meeting with you. This is how to build a strong professional relationship.
Well, I was going to say, listen up, millennials. I mean, you know, you might think it's a personal thing to give somebody your cell phone number to text, but it's that look in the eyes that's going to have more impact, I think, long term.
I think that we're going to see within the next 2 years, not much longer than that, we're going to see a lot more face-to-face in digital.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen. The first person, for instance, you're looking for that grill, right? If you could look at the grill and then you could click someplace, and instead of having live chat,
you can have
an actual person. You can talk to a representative. Face-to-face.
Yeah, I don't understand. By the way, Michael, you just bring up a great point. I mean, I was just going to mention, in my office, we have offices all over the country, and what we use is we use a video tool that we are on all the time. Instead of making a phone call, instead of, like, sending an email, we get somebody on video. We have video cameras that are in the offices, so you can see if someone's sitting at the desk in Sioux Falls or in the office in New York City. Just like if you were to look up from your cubicle or look up from your desk and look over and see if the person's there. That's what we try to emulate. And then I ping them and we get on the phone.
And I say
the phone.
Way.
It's not the phone. It's a video. I want to see you pay attention to me, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing too, Jeff, is you're using technology in a way that is very human. You're building human relationships through technology. Instead of separating yourself from the person. I mean, I've always thought that, you know, we've lost a couple of generations here who can't strike up a conversation with a stranger because their social networking has ruined their social skills. And they don't really, they feel very awkward, you know, saying hello to a stranger.
I was watching the Today Show. All right, I ran into Olivia Stearns today, running outside the office. But I was watching her on the Today Show this morning, and they were talking about how the millennial generation's missing some basic life skills, like tying their shoes and like striking up conversations because they're so used to doing other things digitally or doing it in different ways. I think that's phenomenal.
Well, you know, we work with a lot of millennials and. You know, one of the big challenges that we have is that many of them have kind of like thrown the baby out with the bath. They've said, oh, you know, you old curmudgeons, you know, you don't know how to text, you don't know how to do this or that. So they've given up on other things that the war babies or that the boomers had to offer, which is, here's how you made friends with people, you know?
Yeah, right. So, well, let me ask another question. You talk about fun in the book and how it can translate to more funds in the workplace with millennials. What's that concept?
Millennials like to work in groups. Mm-hmm. So by allowing them to work in groups, you're giving them fun. And if somebody's not having a fun in their job, whatever it is, then that job doesn't have their attention. It doesn't have their creative abilities. It doesn't really entice them to stay there. They'll go out and look for something else. So fun is always important no matter what you're doing. But we said if you can't make them laugh, don't make them whine.
I like that. That's pretty good.
That's true in any business.
Yeah, but you know, I think that applies to any. I think it applies to the older folks as well as the younger folks in terms of the business.
Of course. Yeah. And everybody who doesn't like to have fun.
Yeah.
If you've got somebody smiling and laughing, which happen of having a big foot on your label happens to give people, you know, that smile on their face, they're already halfway to yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
It's engaging.
Hey, let me take one more break, and then I want to go into delegation because I really like your thoughts around that, and I want to ask you some tough questions around it. So I want to talk about my friends at Sane Box. That's S-A-N-E Box. I spell it out so you know because I confused the name for a little bit myself. So are you swamped by emails? You're spending hours and hours of sorting out what's important and what's not? I was in the same spot until I found this company, and then I called them and said, look, you got to let me give this away to my friends for a couple weeks, let them try it. And every friend that I've ever given this product to, they love this thing. And by the way, it only costs you like 10, 20 bucks a month, depending on which level of service you want. But here's what it does. It basically, I put it into my email box. It trains my emails over a couple days. I drag an email that I don't want to read into black hole. I drag this one over to newsletters. I drag this one over to later. I can even tag emails to people that say 1 day, 2 day, 2 hours, 3 hours, 1 month for follow-up in case the person doesn't get back to me or I want to put it off. And by putting in the BCC, or sometimes I put it right in the CC, like 1 hour, which means to my team, in 1 hour, you don't have an answer. I'm coming back at you because it drops it back in my inbox. This is a unbelievable time saver. It is my secret weapon, which I'm not making so secret by giving it to everybody here. So if you want a couple weeks free, all you got to do is go to www.sanebox.com/ Hazlett, my name, Hazlett, and you're going to get a couple weeks for free to try it out, and you sign up. I'm telling you, I'm sold on this. I actually bought this for every single person in all the companies that I own. So, cool product. Now, Bonnie and Michael, I got to ask you this, delegation, okay? Because I also know you're both very good hands-on people. Because I've known you for a long time. You can tell by the discussions that we're having, attention to detail is very important to you. So how do you do the best and yet delegate the rest?
It's really tough, first of all, Jeff, particularly if you're type A, take charge business owners.
Which entrepreneurs are. I mean, that's the reason they're doing it. You bet.
So eventually, those type A take charge business owners are going to figure out they can't do everything.
Yep.
And hopefully along the line, they're going to figure out that there's some real professionals out there that actually do have a better grip on how to get the job done than you do, believe it or not, such as accounting and such as certain sales and marketing expertise and artists. And that kind of thing. Well, of course, there's people that are more highly qualified. At that point, you really have to give up and do some delegation. But you don't just turn it over to them. You actually give them overkill in orientation of exactly what you're looking for. What is the goal? And not just the goal of this one project, but how does this project fit into the goal of your company? So by understanding the big picture, they can be better at doing the minute details that are required for you to carry on your business. And you really have to inspect what you expect.
Oh, that's good. I love that.
Keep in touch with them.
Yeah. You know, and it's just a very simple thing. I mean, don't forget, entrepreneurs, this is what's going to happen, and I'm sure this was the same way for Michael and Bonnie, but we start out, entrepreneurs, we start as a one-man band or one-woman band. We do it ourselves. And then later on, we add devout followers. I think, Michael, I remember you telling me a story about either Bonnie's mother or your mother got involved with the business. And then, so we add up all these friends and family, and we rope them into it. And then we move to the next stage, which is just exactly what you were talking about, Bonnie, which is about adding the skilled professionals, technicians that we really need to run the business. And those are the stages. And your business went through the same stages, didn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, the toughest part of delegation is when you are trying to delegate a decision-making, say, an administrative or corporate or marketing decision-making position to someone else.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is really tough.
It's tough.
Some people you'll delegate to, and you will find out that, you know, they Peter principled out. They just can't take on that responsibility, yeah. Or they just can't make those kinds of decisions. I had a guy who wasn't doing very well. He was in sales, corporate sales, and you know, he's on the phone. He was talking to distributors across the United States. He wasn't doing very well. So I said, "Come on into my office." So I picked up the phone, and I just did his job in front of him and made him watch me do it. And then I would put the phone down, and I'd say, "Now, did you notice this? Did you notice that? Take note of this. Now, you take the next call." And then I would criticize him. And, I mean, there were some shouting matches there.
Sure.
But the thing is, he became our number one top salesman. I never had to look at him after that.
Yeah, that's what you got to do, and it's not easy to give it up either. You know, there's a, excuse my language in saying it, but there's a kind of a sphincter moment where you know, the whole body tightens up when you turn it over to somebody for the, because it's your baby. It's tough.
Jeff, let me add something to that. Michael did that, I think, for a period of about a month. And also, in addition to that, that real extreme hands-on training, we also changed the way he was paid, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We reduced his guaranteed salary, and we greatly increased his commission for making a sale. So he had major chain buyers that he was working with and major distributors. So we took a look at where we were at. We took a look at where we wanted to be. We said, when you reach where we want to be, we're going to put this much money into your bank account.
Oh,
so
wow.
Each distributor and each buyer had a dollar amount based on the volume that he could potentially make, and that was quite a good incentive for him. He was coin-operated, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
I'd just like to add something to what Bonnie said, and that is, you know, we used to have this joke, you know, what do I have to do? Do I have to bribe you to pick up the shovel to shovel the gold into the trunk of your car? You know, and then how long do I have to bribe you to pick up the shovel? Oh, look, you're picking up the shovel without a bribe. Okay, good.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
So the thing is, you know, some of these incentives are only necessary to get them going till they start to realize that it's making a difference in their overall paycheck and their bonuses and in their benefits. But, you know, getting their attention, oh, my goodness. This is the challenge in life.
Well, let me tell you, you guys are chock full of stuff. Let me tell you, it's like bottlefuls and cases, if I can use the analogy from your wine business. We're talking to Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey, the founders of the massively popular wine label Barefoot Wine, which they went on to sell for millions and millions of dollars. They've really done it. They're an American dream. They're the entrepreneurial spirit, and they've written the brand new book called The Entrepreneurial Culture, 23 Ways to Engage and Empower Your People. This is a book that you want to pick up. Run right now. Google it. I don't know, Yahoo it, Bing it, whatever, or get down to a bookstore and get this book. I've got mine. You better get yours. Bonnie and Michael, thanks for joining me.
Excellent. Thank you. And be sure to send your listeners to www.thebarefootspirit.com/TEC for the entrepreneurial culture.
I love it. All right. You just did. So there we go. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Always great.
Taking you behind the scenes of what's happening in the business world, Jeffrey Hazlett hosts All Business, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts.
You know that after every show, at least those that listen a lot, I like to talk about the things I learned, and I always learn things every single show. And the one that I want to highlight, actually I'm going to do two highlights that I really like, and that was one, separation. That if you're a husband and wife team, and this goes for fathers and daughters and mothers and sons and so forth, family members that work in the business, I have to constantly remind myself of this, that when you're home, you're home. And you need to separate the business and not talk about the business when you're off duty. Because you need to have the off duty. We forget that sometimes in a family business. And, you know, the more you do that, the better it is. Like, work is work and home is home. It's tough to be a dad and be a boss at the same time, right? So you don't need to do that at home as well, because it's a different relationship. And especially when I think it's really tough for husband-wife teams. And, you know, it can be really rewarding, but it can also be very tough. So, but with hard work comes great success, you know, and great rewards, and you get that. Now, the second thing I want to know is know the need. I thought that was a great concept that they put into the book, and know the need, you know. The fact that it's important for people to know, not keep them in the dark and know why we're doing what we're doing and the ways in which we're doing it. And by understanding that, you'll be a better employee, a better contributor, by knowing why we need it. So know the need for what we're doing and why it originated. So anyway, that's it right there. I thought those were two gems. There were a lot of other gems in there. This has been Jeffrey Hazlett, All Business with Jeffrey Hazlett, right here on CBS and Play.it and iTunes. And don't forget, please tell your friends and rate the show, because more ratings we get, the better it is. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Of what's happening in the business world. Jeffrey Hazlett hosts All Business, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts.